Thank you, Johnny, for leading that last song. I don't know, I just needed that spirit to give me a peace. I was extremely nervous, but that song seemed to help. Over the past month, I have pondered a thought that Brother Alvin shared several months ago, maybe Wednesday evening discussion from home. And it kept ringing in me, in my heart, and I kept pondering it, and that is, for such a time as this. I don't know if you remember him saying it. Several times he'd say, for such a time as this. Maybe you don't even remember, Alvin. But it kept coming to me, and I started thinking of the story in the book of Esther. And I pondered over the month with various things, and you know, even in small things. And I just had to think, for such a time as this, there's a number, 53506, that is registered with the in the government book, that I've got the right to marry people. I haven't used it for years. This year, Lord willing, I'll be marrying three couples by the end of the summer, for such a time as this. They had difficulty because of offices and such like being closed, but I had the authority as such from the government to do it. I could help them out, so I trust there's a blessing on that for such a time as this. And this morning, on a lighter note, I was thinking actually about my ears. As we were driving down here, my wife all of a sudden, oh, where are masks? And I had taken the lighter one that I normally use and put it in the pickup truck, but we had one there that a friend had made for us, and it's got elastic stretchies, and as a child, I would have loved that thing for a slingshot. But anyway, it pulls my ears like it, but you've probably noticed I've got a good set of ears that stick out. As a child, even in school, in the public school, they nicknamed me Ollie. Apparently, Ollie was some character that his ears stuck way out from a movie. So I was Ollie through the public school time. And on top of that, my older siblings used to always tease me why my ears stick out like that. Apparently, at a young age, I had a will or a temper in me, and it was hard to break. And whenever I didn't get my way, I got upset, I'd hit my ears. So they said that's why my ears stick out the way they do. But on the way down, as I pulled out that and I said, oh, well, I guess I'll have to wear this one. Hey, it stayed on. My ears held that mask right in place for such a time as this. Who knows, right? And that's the title of my message, Who Knows? You can turn with me to the book of Esther. I'm planning to kind of, I'll be reading some, but kind of some in my own words and interpretation as it comes. Like to kind of go through kind of the story of, basically it's Esther and Mordecai that we're looking at here. And of course, the onset of various characters that brought to place the story really entails or really brings out for us today. As the story goes, Vashti was the queen of the king at the time, Ahasuerus. And he was a ruler, and he was a king that ruled a lot of provinces. If I understand right correctly, it's about 127, all the way ranging from India to Ethiopia. So he had a tremendous authority, if you want to say, or a responsibility as a king. But anyways, the king in this occasion had planned a party as such, and had invited all his governing body from the different provinces to come to this party. And in this party, and in its own right, I personally wonder if I really blame Queen Vashti that she refused to do what he asked of him. On the other hand, we all know that we are taught in the scriptures that we are to obey our authority, and she was asked to, he wanted her in more or less prance and maybe even dance in front of his whole audience. Well, she outright refused. And this was a tremendous offense to the king. Enough and so that it angered him enough to decide to get a new queen. And reading into it, I'm wondering, even with all the concubines and the various maids he had in that, maybe because of the experience, he said, you know what, I'm going to just reach out and I'm going to see if there isn't new blood out there. And basically that's what happened. So they started this plan to try and find a new queen to please the king. Now, I don't understand or try and understand or claim to understand everything about this process, but it almost seemed to me that there was a certain amount of time frame that went to it to get them to the place where the king would observe, and he had his own, I don't know if what you would have called them, chamberlains or whatever in this, or maids that would help with the process and would work with these ladies that came in to, that they'd be presentable for the king to view and decide who could possibly be his new queen. The ladies that were eligible, they did head to the king's chamberlain. I get this bit of a mental picture of all the bridesmaids before a wedding. Many times they will meet maybe at the bride's house or whatever, and they all help each other get dolled up for the special day. And that's somewhat what I'm thinking here, is that that's the procedure of the chamberlain. And in there, they help each other get dolled up and so forth and such like, whatever goes on. I should maybe have a lady come up and explain it, but we'll leave that. Anyway, the procedure continues, and from here the king chooses a queen as they present themselves. The part that we really want to focus on is how God works with his people. Let's stop for a moment and just ponder again the thought of this Jewish girl, which was named after Esther. Her original name doesn't come to me right now. But Esther, her experience was losing her parents, and Mordecai's experience was that he was taken in captivity and carried away with the Babylonians. So here we have two negatives that happened in life. That's life. It's always been life and it always will be. Life doesn't count out fair. And you know, the sooner and the younger we understand and accept that, probably the easier it is to focus on life as we get it. But let's not forget. Brother Clarence, last Sunday I heard on his message that he quoted or read the verses out of Peter as a chosen generation, a royal priesthood. I believe the New Testament era, when the curtain was split in two, that door opened to all of people. Every tribe and nation can be a chosen generation if he chooses to be one. And if you're part of that family this morning, you've got something going for you. And those are the promises that we want to lie on as we go through life. No, it won't necessarily be fair. And I want to say this right from the beginning. You know, the story of, or the book of Esther is actually a storybook that that you read as a child and they lived happily ever after. Life isn't always like that. It doesn't always come out like our Mordecai and the queen experienced here, but the promise is the same. The end result is the same when we think on the spiritual perspective and God's promises to his people. Because we will turn out victorious at the end, and we will experience the blessings and the promises that God has given us. Jonathan did remind us 2 weeks ago that there's also promises in the scripture, you know, that in some ways it's not real fun to read them. But as Bible readers and believers, we know we're living in the days of seducing spirits, doctrines of devil, diseases upon diseases coming through and through. You know, in the last 20 years in the chicken business, in the hog business, I've observed and watched, and it seems every 5 years it's getting worse. And every avian flu that comes out, there's another strain that comes out and it's stronger. I'm cleaning and washing my barn more often because of disease and getting more strict with it because of diseases. It's in the scripture. It's there. It's a sign of the times. Jesus is coming back. He promised it. And it'll be fulfilled through his promises in the Bible. You know, and as I get older and as I continue to read, I probably was raised with the Machiavellian view to most part. It was wasn't talked much about through my, I wouldn't say there are some that were maybe stronger this way and other. But boy, sometimes as I read the scriptures, you guys that believe in the pre-millennium and the rapture, I hope the rapture comes soon. I do. But you know what? I don't have to fear. God has promised, regardless of what reveals itself and what we see as a people, I want to remind you that you are here now. You don't know why, but for a time as this. Yes, you are. God didn't make a mistake with any one of you, and I don't care how old you are this morning. He did not make a mistake. It's up to us to experience and allow the promises of God to carry us through. That's the decision we have to make as we go through here with Mordecai and Esther. And they were willing to step and lay their neck out on the line for sake of their people, for the sake of the promises of God. And that's what we face today. So here, the king has chosen a queen, and she's Esther. Like I mentioned, a Jewish girl raised by her cousin because she lost her parents. Mordecai was carried away with captivity. So he had all those negative things and aspects in his life. And yet I believe Mordecai, being a man of God, was an instigator of Esther becoming the queen. He allowed the Spirit of God intervene in his heart, that he encouraged her to go in there to the chamberlain and be assessed as a possibility. At that point, Mordecai did not know yet what was coming. But somehow, in his heart, he was strong and convinced that Esther should go and try and be a considerable aspect for the queen. The king just seemed to adore her. He just seemed to, something about her just, and I'm convinced she had outer beauty, but I'm even more convinced it was the inner beauty of her love for God that really spoke to him and really shone, even if he didn't know it. It was her relationship with God and the understanding of what she was taught from her people that really made the character and person she was. As the story goes, there were two right-hand men of the king, very much up in their position, two of the king's chamberlains. Mordecai, coming to the King's Gates, and it seemed like a daily experience for him, especially since Esther was there to try and keep touch and knowing what was proceeding or what was going on in the kingdom there. He overheard these two men of authority and position that they were going to lay hands on Azarias the king, and they were going to do him hard and do him harm and most likely kill him. Which Mordecai conveyed to Esther, the queen. And in turn, she warned the king. And at that time, when she warned the king of this message that was overheard, she also told the king who told her. Mordecai. Now, Mordecai, earlier on, right from the start, he had told Esther, do not tell the king or his majesty that you're a Jew. I still don't think Mordecai knew for sure. Why? But he had a strong feeling in his heart not to mention it, that she shouldn't mention it. And she conveyed this, and the outcome, we all know it if we're Bible readers, to these evildoers, it was the death sentence. They lost their lives. So like in all politics and governing bodies, these spots needed to be filled, so these two were replaced with one man. And most likely a man that the king had honored and sensed respect from and appreciated in what he did in the work of his kingdom. So with this promotion, Haman was asked to take this spot. So Haman, an Agagite, was given the mandate above all princesses. So in other words, he was given a lot of authority in probably short order. And I don't know that we read where he was pulled out or what, if you want to call it a ladder of importance or power, where he was in that ladder. But at that point, he almost became next to the king, other than the queen. So he had authority. Do you know what? There's something there that smells to me that that power just went right to his head right away. He just, his head got big and his shoulders got wide, and there was something about it that was nasty. Right away, there was a decay to his heart that went south. And he was just gathering for all and gloating for everything he could get. And then on top of it, the king commands those around him, especially the magistrate of the kingdom, to honor him and bow down and bring that kind of a respect every time they meet him. But Mordecai kept coming to the gates in which this man was responsible for the most part, but Mordecai would not bow to him. So right away, he started developing a hate towards Mordecai. And for some reason, somewhere along the line, whether it was Mordecai or someone else, he found out that Haman was a Jew. Or not Haman, Mordecai was a Jew. So, as he pondered this, and I'm guessing this vested over time, as it got to him and he sensed it more and more, and even his magistrates or those that were under him would recognize this and even say something, which bit at him a little more. So Haman started plotting, thinking how he could get rid of him. Only my surmising, but I'm guessing that probably most of the Jews would not bow. So if Haman could get a law stamped with the king's imprint that would destroy the Jews, it didn't look suspicious to the king that it was mostly Mordecai he really was after. He had it in for him. He wanted to get rid of him. Let's turn to Esther 3. I'd like to read verses 8 to 15. And Haman said unto the king, Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom. And their laws are diverse from all people, neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have charge of the business to bring it unto the king's treasuries. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it unto Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the Jew's enemy. And the king said unto Haman, the silver is given to thee, to the people also, to do with them as it seemeth good to thee. Then were the king's scribes called on the 13th day of the first month, and there was written according to all that Haman had commanded unto the king's lieutenants and unto the governors that were over every province and to the rulers of every people of every province according to the writing thereof and to every people after their language. And in the name of King Ahasuerus was it written and sealed with the king's ring. And the letters were sent by posts in all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to take the spoil of them for prey. The copy of the writing for a commandment to be given to every province was published unto all people, that they should be ready against that day. The posts went out being hastened by the king's commandment, and the decree was given in. Shushan, the palace, and the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. My understanding here of Shushan seemed to be the majority of the Jewish people. And so they were in confusion. They were, let's put ourselves there. Mordecai rent his clothes and he put him sackcloth and ashes and he cried out loud in mourning and pain. There was great mourning in the Jewish community. Mordecai laid at the city gates, just mourning and mourning. Informed by her maids and the chamberlains about Mordecai, Esther, not knowing that a law was signed to destroy the Jews, sent them to find out what was going on. Actually, first she sent them clothes that he would put on clothes, but Mordecai refused to put the clothes back on. So she called her appointed attendee, Hatach, to go find out what was going on. And he brought back the news of the decree or the law that was written and stamped. But with that, Mordecai sent a plea that she would appeal for the lives of the Jewish people. Stop for a moment and just think. In your own experience, if that was you there, how would have you responded? Knowing the situation, knowing that there's only a given time that you as a queen could go in and really appeal to the king. And doing it in another given time was a tremendous risk. the risk of your life. Sure, she responded just like I would. Are you crazy? I could be killed for it. I can't do that. Are you not thinking straight? Unless he chooses to hear me or set me free by holding out his golden scepter, I could die. It's way too risky. Mordecai's response to Esther, let's take chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall there an enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth, whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" She doesn't know, does she? Who knoweth it? History really only answers those questions. We know that today. But today, you don't know. You don't know why you're born in this time frame. Completely. Yes, you do. To bring glory to God. You don't know maybe what divine or word isn't coming to me right now, but what God has intended to use you for in this time. So never give up hope. Never despair. You know, sometimes I feel a little bit guilty for the time that I was allowed to live in. Not that I didn't have hard times, but for the most part, it was extremely good. It was. And sometimes I'm wondering if my generation is to blame for some of the fear that maybe the next generation is contemplating or dealing with right now. Because I say, including myself, the American dream is right at the heart level. Maybe we didn't always do it automatically, but it came because we lived in it. And it almost seemed that it was owed to us. We worked hard, of course we did. Started with little and sweated our brows to the mast. But did God ever promise his people that we're going to live in prosperity and freedom and... No, he didn't. There's some people out there that may say that, but it's not true. But who knows why he has you in this generation? Who knows? It may be for such a time as this. So Mordecai, sending back that message that she would reconsider. So let's read Esther's response on her reconsidering of Mordecai's plea. Esther 4, 16 and 17. "Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. So here we have a WhatsApp message this morning for prayer, for fasting. Esther is going in to risk her life for the sake of the Jews. But are you and I willing to risk the life, or for such a time as this, not give up, possibly lose our life for the sake of God's chosen people? A royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, and all those that are not part of that kingdom yet. So they prayed and they fasted for 3 days and three nights. Then, as stated, the queen met with the king, and because of his favor for her, his golden scepter extended to her, to her touch, and a promise of a favor for Esther. You know, Esther could have right there shared. But let's not forget, there was prayer and fasting. All the Jews, Esther, Mordecai, and all the Jews that were involved in this WhatsApp request were praying. Esther didn't have the Spirit telling her to reveal what she wanted. She didn't know. She didn't know. I'm sure she didn't know. But she requested a meeting or a banquet with the king and his right-hand man. So that was granted to him. Let's stop and ponder again. Now the word comes, the provident hand of God. That's what I wanted to say before, thinking of God using you. In his provident hand, God sees the big picture. He knows a whole lot more than any of you and I can even imagine to know. But as we rest on him, he reveals it. He reveals it. So the hand of God playing out his role as he knows the big picture. God needed to work with the heart of the king. He needed to work in the king's heart and get him ready for what was coming. So, like I mentioned, at the first meeting, she requested another, where she would ask the full petition. However, in that time, God worked on the king's heart. Proverbs 21:1, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord as the rivers of water. He turneth it so whether he will. The power of God, man, let's never underestimate. God is everything. And you and I are serving that God. He could turn the creek that flows to Huron to go to Erie, or he could go likewise. He could do whatever he wants to do. He's got that kind of power and sources. Are we trusting in that kind of power? You know, I actually think if we met this place of Esther and Mordecai, it might help us, realizing that we are so little, but God is so big. Esther 6, verses 1 and 3. On that night, could not the king sleep. And he commanded to bring the book of the records of the chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, but Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, "What honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this?" Then said the king's servant that ministered unto him, "There's nothing been done for him." Just stop and ponder that for a minute. Here the king basically had forgot. I believe he forgot that someone did such a kind deed and actually saved his life. But you know what? The God we're serving, he just kind of, probably before sleep, put a thought in his mind. Remember that Mordecai guy? You know, you wouldn't even be here anymore if it wouldn't have been for him. And he says, you know, that's right. I should pay some honor to him. You know, it's almost funny when I really stop and think of it. The guy that was trying to get rid of him, and how God worked in the heart of people's lives to turn this around. But there he was, the king really felt that something should be done. So as God reminded the king of the kindness shown to him by Mordecai some time back, in which he basically saved his life, the king felt that there should be some type of honor granted to him. Meanwhile, the heart of Haman is boastful and proud and angry at Mordecai. Jeremiah 17, verse 9 reads this way, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" You know, Haman was, I get this guy somehow. And his heart was just growing in filth and evil. Somehow I'm just going to get rid of this guy. And, well, he goes back and he relates this, that his feelings with his wife and his friends there. And so his wife and his friends encouraged Haman to go build a why don't you just build a gallows and have him hung? Go to the king and it'll be good riddance of Mordecai. Done with, over with, on we go with life. Because of the new law, he thought, you know what? That's probably a good idea. That'd probably work, you know. The king's really honored him. He just threw him right up there in position. And shouldn't be a problem. Let's turn to Esther 6 and read verses 4b to 10. "Now Haman was come unto the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai in the gallows that he had prepared for him. And the king's servants said unto him, Behold, Haman standeth in the court. And the king said, Let him come in. So Haman came in, and the king said unto him, What shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, To whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself?" Man, have you ever smelled or seen pride? Wow, it's so evident, it stinks. Like, surely he could be a little more smooth about it. He just says it how he feels and thinks, oh yeah, it's all about him. "And Haman answered the king, For the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let the royal apparel be brought which the king useth to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon, and the crown and royal which is set upon his head. And let the apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princesses, that they may array the man without whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city and proclaim before him, Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. Then the king said to Haman, Make haste, take apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to who? Mordecai the Jew. Just stop and think of all this. Oh my goodness, I'm trying to think how Haman, how he responded. I'm surprised the king didn't say, what's wrong? What's wrong, Haman? You know, I can't about imagine when he heard this how he must have pretty near dropped. So here, Mordecai, the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate, let nothing fail of what thou hast spoken. Here Haman had spoken all these things himself. It wasn't even the king, it was him. You ever thought of pride cometh before a fall? That's a big one. That's a big fall. But you know, it's a lesson for us. And again, let's continue to apply it to our own lives as we go through this story. So here we are. Haman goes back and tells what happened to his wife and that. And before he could even finish his story, somebody came and requested Haman to come to the banquet. He didn't even have time to make a second plan. And he was headed to this banquet with Esther and the king. So Esther and the king and Haman met for their banquet. And he asked again, how can I favor or please you? So Esther revealed her request, that she was a Jew and so was Mordecai. I wonder if the king at all thought of the decree or the law that was written, that was stamped at that moment. I wonder if maybe the king almost gasped for breath. But she requested that this evil plot put out against them by Haman, that her people could live. She didn't mention it that way, right away, but she said, someone, and the king asked, who is this man? And she said, Haman, sitting right amongst them. And as the story goes, the king was upset. And more so because he went out for a moment and came back in, and Haman was almost, and I'm not convinced that he was really doing something immorally more than trying to pressure Esther to somehow change this thing around, and he was almost on top of her, and this made the king even more furious. And he said, let's have him hung at once, or get rid of him at once. And those that shared with him or worked with him knew that Haman had built these gallows, and they just suggested, we'll just take care of him there. So there, the destruction of himself was taken on upon his own building because of his evil heart for another man that loved God. And from there, Mordecai took Haman's place, and Esther was given the house of Haman. I'd like to draw 4 points out of this as we come together with the thoughts. Probably could have went further or even drawn some more of the direct book, but now I'd like to pull out about 4 points for us that we can take from this book and apply as we go through life. And I'd like to read those verses, which I have somewhat quoted. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which hath not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. The first thing that we want to get from this, as a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, God has a special plan in life for each one of us. And I want you to make sure, children, the age of understanding, youth, as you go from here and ponder this thought, that he has a plan and a purpose, and it's not a mistake that you're here today. God has promised the strength needed as you go through life. If you are willing to rely and trust him to the point of risk, God is there. He'll be there. God has a plan that he will reveal to you at his given times. Take each day, each moment, and just allow yourself to apply yourself to the moment. As doors open, allow God to use you. And really, the only way to fulfill that call as God opens those doors is how connected we are to the vine and the experience that we have with God in our own heart. Yes, there is times that we can't have an answer immediately, but we may plead with God, pray and fast for even 3 days and three nights. But God will reveal to us. As we faithfully search through prayer, fasting, obediently following Christ as He directs you through His Spirit, reading the Word, and being open to His call. Don't be afraid to go against the norm when you sense the power of God. Don't be afraid. He's real. He'll walk with you right through. He's there. But too often, we're too human because we're not connected enough. And I'm talking about myself. Proverbs 16:9. In his heart, a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. Remember, God didn't make a mistake where He has you today. Number two, sometimes we have to go against our comfort zone. Take risk. Reach out for the golden scepter, and in your heart, commit yourself. If I perish, I perish. The best things in life often come with the greatest risks. The degree of difficulty does not indicate that God is not in it. Please don't give up because it's difficult. Don't give up because it's difficult. But rather allow God, through the Spirit, allow you to walk through it. In fact, you know, I'm almost more inclined to think, and this is my opinion, that the opposite is closer to true. The easier it is. God never said it would be easy. And number three, the time to follow God's plan is now. Now, Esther 4:14 in another version, for if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to the royal position for such a time as this? Who knows? Who knows? You know, there will be times in life where you've gathered all the information, you've prayed, possibly fasted, you've sought God's counsel, but still we don't know. We sleep on it. Like Esther and the Jews at the time, maybe it's 3 days and three nights with prayer and fasting. We get up in the morning. We muster up courage. Are we ready to step out? Am I ready to step out? Are you ready to step out? Walk by faith. Don't be afraid to let God or allow God to determine the outcome. You know what? So often the fear of man keeps us from stepping out, from really being who God is wanting us to be or using us in His best. And the last one, number four, trusting in God completely brings great rewards. Esther 8:17. And in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and the decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. And many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. Let's just take two of us in this room. And we're a Mordecai and an Esther of our day. And we're willing to be obedient and risk and step out. If I perish, I perish. Because of your willingness, and maybe you do perish, but because of your obedience and your willingness, multitudes and multitudes and multitudes join the chosen generation. The royal priesthood, two people. Let's take all of us. We can have an impact. Mordecai and Esther's obedience and trust saved a nation. The reward for their obedience was massive. Many people became followers of God. The inspiration of a faithful following of God inspired many people. It is always profitable on the long run to obey God. When others see us living in radical obedience, obedience that makes no sense but is truth, the world around us is looking for answers. We may not have all the answers, but we know a God who does. For such a time as this, who knows? God bless you.